California, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Midweek edition of The Horn. A quick program reminder relating specifically to tonight's program. Autumn has arrived with a fanged vengeance here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia. It is blowing hell-bent for leather outside. And as you may know from past similar occasions, it may knock us all the way to the ground, and we get kind of whacked in mid-program. I say that not because I expect it, but because it is a possibility, and I just wanted you to be warned in advance. It's about a minute past the hour, and as noted, it is the middle of the week. It is Wednesday. It's hump day. It's downhill to Friday. But it is, in fact, members of the Horn family, ever so much more than that. Hallelujah. Yes, indeed, brethren and sistren, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. That time when we gather in the middle of the week to refresh our strengths, renew our dedications, and seek spiritual comfort from on high. Prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And we will begin it as we begin it each and every prayer meeting. Now that the fellowship dinner in the fellowship hall down to the basement of the tabernacle has been completed and the deacons have sated themselves on whatever dessert. Well, a lot of folks don't get dessert because of the way the deacons behave. And they've all made their way upstairs. And I will call, brethren and sistren, upon the minister of music to come forward and minister to us with the offertory hymn. With every head bowed and every eye closed, except that one little crack you got to keep open to see when the plate's being passed by you, we will pass the evening offertory plate. There is a tiny little button, apparently very hard to find, in the bottom of the offering plate that says PayPal. Hallelujah, glory. Far behind we are on meeting the church, meeting the church's needs in its building program. I ain't kidding. We're far behind for the month of October. So if you would use, as the plate comes around, don't make change in the collection plate. It's not seen as worthy in the eyes of the Lord. But as the plate comes around, if you just use that little PayPal button, or written underneath it is the snail mail address, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Use either one and tithe so that the Horn may continue to broadcast next month. Can you do it, brethren and sistren? Hallelujah. I have faith that you can. So with every eye closed and every head bowed, except for that little winking you got to do to see the plate coming around, I will call upon the minister of music to come forward and minister to us, hallelujah, glory, in our opening hymn. Brother, please.
Heavenly Father, we thank you tonight for all your blessings. You said in all things give thanks. So we want to thank you tonight for these mighty machines that you've brought before us. Thank you for the Dodges and the Toyotas. Thank you for the Fords. And most of all, we thank you for Rousey Yates Margaret to give us the power that we see before us tonight. Thank you for Tim, Performance Technology, and R07 Engines. Thank you for Snowball Racing Fuel and Goodyear Tires to bring performance and power to the track. Boogity, 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 anyway. Boogity, boogity, boogity.
ancestors, and quit fiddling around out in the vestibule. Don't bother trying to munch on them 25-year-old butter candies sitting in that candy dish. Chase them deacons on into the sanctuary and away from all the sinners out there a-smoking in the parking lot. Glory, this is the Horn. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and I am Brother Bob Kincaid, Arch Pope, Ultimate Imam, Superior Rabbi, Animated Animist, Shameless Shaman. Glory, hallelujah. Come on down that blood red aisle and fall on your knees at the altar and put your hands, brethren and sisters, put your hands on the subwoofer and feel the glory. Feel the healing rays of common sense a flowing through you from the server on high. Glory, hallelujah. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, brethren and sistren. Yes, indeedy. Where do we begin? I'll tell you where we begin, brethren and sistren. We begin here in West Virginia, almost level, where a woman has filed suit against a Texas church, claiming that its leaders should have known, and really, they should, come on, claiming that its leaders should have known that the church's head pastor had a history of raping before they let him travel to West Virginia. That's where he allegedly raped her in his car before he then committed suicide in prison several days later. You may recall the story, we covered it here on the Horn. Yes, indeed, that church should have known. Knew or should have known, and that will be, of course, the standard. We're talking about Brother Matthew Jarrell, servant of the Lord, head pastor of the Open Door, of course, Baptist Church of Mesquite, Texas, naturally. He had a lot of problems. He enticed this particular woman into his Dodge pick-em-up truck, owned by the church, I might add, drove her to a remote area in Sissonville in Kanawha County, West Virginia, where he sexually assaulted and raped her. Yes, indeed, the church knew or should have known. He had a rap sheet, you see. He was arrested in 2007 after another woman accused him of forcing her to have sex. He was arrested in Baltimore in 2003 for trying to pick up a prostitute who turned out to be an undercover police officer. Whoopsie. He served 18 months on probation on a handgun charge in connection to the alleged sexual assault. There's only one problem, and I don't know if it's a problem, but the fact of the matter is, if this case is heard in Texas, it may never come, the woman may never see a dime. Sad, sad, sad. Do you know why? Let me tell you. Do you remember that story coming out of Texas a couple of years ago? About the young woman who had had an exorcism performed upon her by her church? She was beneath the age of consent. She was not a full-on adult. And so she couldn't sue in her own right at the time, but they held her down. They restrained her. They beat her to beat the devil out of her. And when she became an adult, able to sue in her own right, she sued that nasty, filthy church and obtained judgment against them for the battery and the false imprisonment that they had inflicted upon her, as you might expect, because that's exactly what it was. It was battery and it was false imprisonment. You can't just go around doing that kind of thing. And the case went all the way to the Texas Supreme Court. And therein, the Texas Supreme Court, that bastion of justice, held that the young woman could not have a remedy at law against that church, because for the courts to impose a judgment against the church on behalf of the young woman that members of that church had restrained, assaulted, and beaten would be a violation of the church's freedom of religion. That's how bad it is in Texas. Texas is, you know, maybe a half a notch away from being Iran, only with Jesus. Yeah, let that sink in. The Texas Supreme Court held that the young woman could not get a judgment against a church that held her down, falsely imprisoned her, assaulted her, and beat her because to do so would violate the church's First Amendment rights. Never mind hers. Mother. And that's, you know, under principles of stare decisis, that's the law. In Texas, Stan. Do you believe it? And so, this individual has filed suit. And if the case is heard in Texas, her claims may be moot. Now, it's possible that the case, since the rape took place in West Virginia and her domicile is in West Virginia and his was in Texas, it may be a matter of what is called diversity jurisdiction in the federal courts. Or perhaps she has sued in state court. That much is not clear. It's a little journalism problem inside the story itself. And she might be able to get some sort of judgment, perhaps via the insurance coverage that theoretically the church should be carrying. Yes, even churches carry insurance. Faith goes only so far. But if, and it is speculative, I admit, if that case were to be heard in the civil, loosely applied, justice system of the state of Texas, she'd be toast, even though she was raped. Because in the state of Texas, the Supreme Court has declared that rapists and kidnappers, assaulters and batterers, are virtually immune from suit as long as they do it for Jesus. Tough way to begin, huh? Well, it doesn't get any easier. Last night in my conversation with Albert, I made mention, we made mention in the course and context of our conversation, of Rick Bro-Fro-Mix Santorum, who said that being made sport of in a Saturday Night Live skit was bullying, just like what happens to gay teenagers. Yes, he said he was bullied by Saturday Night Live. Now, the Rick Santorum character, as Albert noted, appeared in the skit Maybe 2.5 seconds? It was all about the Repig-Lickin debate. And, for instance, Ron Paul was in an empty parking garage. Michelle Bachmann and Newt Gingrich were in a janitor's closet. And Rick Santorum was in a gay bar on Castro Street in San Francisco. The Andy What's-His-Face played Rick Santorum, and I think it was one line was, "Very funny!" With a bunch of leather-clad guys dancing around him and, you know, rubbing up on him. But Santorum said being mocked like that was being bullied, thereby denigrating and making sport, making light of the scores of young people in this country who have been driven to take their lives by their own hand, by their classmates, their peers, and their communities because of the way that the Christians' God made them. And in the course of that conversation, I mentioned a young man named Jamie Hubley. Read from his Facebook page his suicide note. 15 years old. Not content to have the blood of innocence, another innocent, on its hands, these upstanding, fine, God-fearing Christians and one in particular, Bill Keller, from a website called liveprayer.com, decided to grind the pain in just a little bit more. He posted a statement about young Jamie Hubley's death on the website. He said that the death of Jamie Hubley was upon the hands of, quote, the homosexual community and media who promote his lifestyle to society, including Anderson Cooper, Rachel Maddow, Ellen DeGeneres. Homosexuality is a bondage like alcohol, drugs, gambling, or anything else people get addicted to. The fact is, suicide is exponentially higher among those who choose the homosexual lifestyle. And while those in the media want to blame people like myself who take a biblical stand on the issue, the fact is they are the ones most responsible. God damn him. And I say that as an exhortation to Bill Keller's brutal deity. Sick, sick man. Preys upon the anguish and agonies of others in the name of Jesus Christ. He wrote further, he said, "Sadly, we deal with the loved ones of those who commit suicide every day. Suicide is a desperate and selfish act that is ultimately the sole responsibility of the person who made the choice to end their life. Everyone who commits suicide has reasons that led them to make such a horrible decision. The fact is, suicide is exponentially higher amongst those who choose the homosexual lifestyle. And while those in the media want to blame people like myself who take a biblical stand on this issue, the fact is they are the ones most responsible. A 15-year-old has no real understanding of sexuality, and most are still trying to figure out life and how they fit in. It is the homosexual community and media who promote this lifestyle to society, forcing it to validate legally and ethically this choice of sexual behavior and relationships to our children as normal, even desirable behavior. The Bible says in the last days the truth will become a lie, and a lie, and a lie, the truth. You see, Keller is one of these snake oil drummers who peddles homo nomo therapy, just like Marcus Bachmann. Grinding his boot into the agonizing souls of the family of Jamie Hubley, he continues and concludes, "It is the God in the Bible, not Bill Keller, that calls homosexuality a sin. It is sad to see children, those who don't even know what sex is, being brainwashed by our modern society that engaging in sex with a person of the same sex is a wonderful thing. God created sex between a man and a woman in the bonds of marriage. All sex outside of God's plan is not only a sin, but destructive. We are fortunate to see God's grace daily work in the lives of men and women who have been in bondage to the lie of homosexuality as they find free freedom, true joy, and true peace living as God created us." Hear and know the words of the demon followers of right-wing fundamentalist Christianity, wherein their Savior said not a word about gay people, and they most assuredly existed in the time of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer. Not a word. And Jesus did say unto them, "Woe to ye homosexuals, for I do not like thee." It ain't in there. Not a peep. Not a word. But they go clawing around through obscure passages tucked away somewhere behind "Thou shalt not wear a polyester dacron blend," and decide that God said homosexuality is a sin. Many cultures have had taboos against homosexual conduct. Many others have not. Generally, you find those taboos against homosexuality where, A, it exists rather broadly, and, B, where there is a need for the tribe to grow and populate. Cultures may be rationally understood, you see, but religions never can. So that is where we will begin our prayer meeting Wednesday. A brief remark on the song I played. I don't think I'm going to play it anymore. I'm surprised I didn't get an email from anyone. I'm not going to play it anymore. And I did it deliberately so we could talk about this just a little bit. Now, there's going to be some mention of sport here, Horn family. Please don't go running screaming away from your computer speakers. He's talking about sports again. Because, once again, this is one of those moments where liberals and progressives' failure to understand that cultural phenomenon works to our detriment. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people go to NASCAR events, you see. And they don't just go to see drivers go fast around a track and turn left a lot. they go for the wrecks. And the same thing obtains in other the forms of racing as well. Our good buddy Spike could probably speak to this with more expertise than I. I am not a racing fan. But this past weekend, there was a horror in Las Vegas, Nevada. Two-time IndyCar champ Dan Weldon, a mere 33 years old, was killed this past Sunday in Las Vegas. In a 15-car IndyCar pileup at the Las Vegas Speedway, which had been promoted by the track and by the sponsor of the race as being exceptionally dangerous and thrilling. The track itself was not conducive to running open-wheeled Indy cars on it. It had progressive grades in its banks. And if you ever see the footage, it's sickening to behold. It's amazing that only one individual died in that 15-car flameout. And the whole thing was pulled together as a stunt, a publicity stunt, with a $5 million purse to entice drivers onto that track. The track was overcrowded with cars. There were more cars on it than belonged there. And Dan Weldon, 33 years old, with two infant children and a lovely wife, was killed Pharaoh dead because the track was too fast, too small, and too crowded. Drivers had pointed it out. Journalists had pointed it out. Other race fans had pointed it out, as Dave Zirin notes in his column at The Nation. Before the Indy 500, drivers get an opportunity to practice for about 3 weeks. Drivers on this Vegas track had about, 3 hours of prep time. It was a recipe for disaster, and the disaster was fulfilled. At the height of empire, citizens and slaves, rich and poor, poured into the Circus Maximus and later the Flavian Amphitheater of Rome. We call it the Colosseum because of the giant statue of Nero that stood by at the Colosseo. To see mock naval battles, chariot races, gladiatorial combat, with everyone in the building knowing that they were going there not just to see the ordinary, but the spectacle of grim death itself. Something to remember, by the way, the next time you hear some ignorant Christian saying, "Well, the Christians were fed to the lions in the Colosseum," you can look at him and say, "I can't believe you, because it's obvious you know nothing about history." No Christians were fed to any lions in any Colosseum. The so-called persecutions took place in the Circus Maximus, on the backside of the Palatine Hill. Not in the Flavian Amphitheater. No. But they make that mistake all the time because the members of that death cult are obsessed with gore and with grim bloody death. Just a little history moment. So, there you have it. No more boogity, 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 amen on Wednesday night prayer meeting. We'll go back to Chaser, our old standard. But I wanted to explain, I wanted to just make mention of that horrible, horrible story and the price that people pay. For the greed of others. Because of that greed, two little children don't have a father, and a lovely young woman is without a spouse. There are greater costs in our world than we are inclined frequently to give the contemplation it deserves. 27, almost 26 minutes before the hour, and let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Janie.
Hey, Janie. How are you, dear?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm well.
I'm sorry I missed you on October 6th.
Not half as sorry as I am. Because
it was amazing.
I was feeling sorry and being sorry at the same time.
It was phenomenal. I'm so glad that I went. It was the most incredible experience probably that I've ever had.
Well, I ran some of the video of Malloy's remarks, and they were profound and powerful, and I can't help but imagine the whole thing must have been that way.
I was in tears pretty much most of the day.
But they weren't tears of they weren't all tears of anger. Some of them were sort of uplifting, if that's possible.
Well, it's just cool to have be around like-minded people. And I did actually go to the Occupy Miami, and we had a phenomenal turnout. I couldn't believe. I mean, this is a cesspool of apathy, and I couldn't believe all of the people that actually showed up in Miami. And that was pretty cool, too.
Well, you know, so much of America, Janie, is a cesspool of apathy. But maybe some of that is wearing off. Maybe the lights are going on. Maybe realization is beginning to dawn because the difficulties are becoming more profound, are they not? It's getting harder and harder for ordinary people to get by.
Right. Yeah. And Miami is so much of a fake. You know, everything is all smoke and mirrors in this town. There's this up-and-coming area that used to be like a warehouse district. They call it the Arts District now, and they have, like, a lot of really cool restaurants and galleries and stuff. But I was reading an article in one of the local papers, and they park Ferraris out there. They rent the Ferraris. They hire, you know, attractive women. I mean, and I was just like, oh, my God. Wow. I didn't even think that people could do that.
That's amazing. Wow. Ferraris?
And Austin Martins and, I mean, names of cars that I can't even pronounce, nor I knew existed.
Gee whiz.
So I was pretty impressed that all those people did actually turn out. And they do general assemblies every night at 6:30. And they were talking about going to one of the banks and withdrawing their money, and I wanted to go on one of those marches.
I would assume that would be Bank of America.
Well, you name it. Because Chase is all over down here like a virus.
Amazing, amazing. Bank of America is, I said Bank of America just because there is a move afoot to, I hope, punish Bank of America for its predatory practices and the fact that it doesn't pay taxes and still expects to have all the benefits and privileges of so-called personhood within the United States.
Are you familiar with that Occupy the Boardroom?
I've heard some about it, yes.
I emailed a Wells Fargo executive and asked if they were still, because I saw that they had a 21% increase in profit the last quarter. And they were foreclosing and repossessing troops' cars.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was way disgusting.
So I asked if they were continuing to do that.
Nice. I'm assuming there's been no response.
No. Well, apparently it's like it goes into like this big filter because they can't actually give out email addresses and all that stuff for privacy purposes. So it goes into this big filter, and the idea is to bombard all the major CEOs with emails.
Wow.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
It is.
And I loved your story about your trip. I didn't even know that existed. I mean, that was really hopeful, too.
Neither did I, and that's one of the benefits of me getting to get out of town every once in a while is the fact that, well, I think it's good for me because I need a change of perspective periodically just to remind me that there are other people in this struggle beyond the confines of the blasted mountains here.
Yeah.
And it is inspiring.
It's grew up there.
And their dedication to saving their culture is incredibly inspiring. You're absolutely right. You were saying, I'm sorry.
That guy that you met that was actually from there, that was, like, total ironic.
Oh, it blew my mind because, you know, all I hear is, hey! And and unless I'm doing something wrong, there's really no reason for it. Hey! There's no reason for that. And then I looked around, oh, dang! What are you doing here? Fortunately, I didn't say, what are you doing here? I mean, but yeah, it was, it had the cachet of, something that was supposed to be. And I know that sounds crazy coming from a non-religious person, but...
No, I think that, I mean, there's lots of things that happen like that that doesn't mean that you are condoning a higher power or whatever. It's just nature, the way of the universe, you know. I think that things are meant to be.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I was. Well, apart from going to D.C. and occupying Miami, and what's your world been? What have you been doing? You haven't been back to Haiti, I trust?
No. The organization that I went with, they're charging $300 to go there now. So I haven't been interested in going back. If a volunteer is a volunteer, you know.
Right.
I don't think you should have to pay to go to Haiti.
Well, I mean, you're paying for your own plane ticket, right?
Well, I think that's what... No, originally when I went, I didn't have to pay anything.
Oh, I see.
That was all... So I don't know if that's what that's about, but I get emails from them, and they're having tons of fundraisers with local celebrities from the Heat and all the teams and blah, blah, blah down here, and they're making tons of money, so I don't really know... I mean, the cost of living isn't that expensive in Haiti, but I don't really see how they can charge their volunteers to go there.
You think maybe some of the donations of necessary medical supplies might be drying up?
It's hard to say. I mean, I don't know if you saw Sean Penn's interview when he was on Democracy Now!, and he brought in narcotics and stuff, and he went through Chavez because of all the crap in the U.S., and so maybe they're having trouble getting drugs and stuff. I really don't know.
I didn't see that interview, but I did see, I saw his appearance with Anthony Bourdain on that episode of No Reservations, and came away profoundly impressed and respectful of the insistence by Sean Penn to walk the walk and talk the talk.
Well, and I don't know if I told you when I was over there that he wouldn't let me get my picture taken with him. He said, you know, he was all business. And, I mean, I'm not a celebrity, although I did get a picture with Sir Mike, but that's different. And I felt really bad because it wasn't really the time to be asking, but I just figured all my right-wing friends' head would explode if I was photographed with Sean Penn.
Well, there's a benefit to that, right?
Yes.
Kind of a little bit messy in the cleanup, but yeah, I understand.
They live in Minnesota, though.
But he simply said, no, I'm just here to do work.
Yeah. And I even respected him even more so for that statement, because it's like, you know, no, I'm not here to be photographed. Piss off. So that was pretty cool. And, I mean, he just seems like a really super nice guy, you know. I mean, his heart is in. I mean, it's, and didn't he have something to do with getting the hikers from Iran released as well? I mean, he does more for our country than any of these so-called politicians.
He is certainly a better ambassador of goodwill. There's no getting around that.
You know, I had sent you, I had gone to New York with my cousin for the 9/11 anniversary. There is a symposium that she wanted to go to that had a bunch of different speakers, and one of them was Ray McGovern, who's such a kind, kind man.
Yes.
Oh, he's just so, most of it was like the 9/11 truthers nonsense. Webster Tarpley, do you know who he is?
Yes. Yes.
Care to elaborate? Because he was like slamming Amy, and I don't understand why anyone would slam Amy Goodman. You know, I mean, she's an awesome.
Well, within the truther world, anyone who doesn't buy into what they say should be bought into is some sort of an enemy. And that's one of the first things that put me off that whole movement is that, you know, they quickly devolved from, I'm going to get letters and emails over this. They quickly devolved from being interested in finding answers to telling people what the answers were and creating an orthodoxy of their own. And if you don't buy whole heart, whole hog, lock, stock, and barrel into the orthodoxy, you know, you become the enemy.
Well, I totally don't buy the official story. I don't.
Neither do I. Neither do I. But the fact of the matter is, and I'm no engineer, you don't have to melt steel to make a building like that collapse. All you have to do is weaken it structurally. But see, I'm already going further into it than I care to go.
Okay, I'll stop. Well, my father was an air traffic controller. I mean, you don't even have to go with the demolition aspect of it. You know, I mean, the rubble was shipped off to China, I think, the next day. The air traffic control tapes have been, you know...
disappeared?
Yeah, and, you know, my father was an air traffic controller, and, you know, when you have a major incident, you kind of want to keep those tapes.
Well, I know somebody who was an air traffic controller working that day out of the Leesburg Center. And that's probably all I should say.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is, no, there is a whole universe of unanswered questions about what happened on that day, Janie, that deserve to be answered. But this generation now has its own Kennedy assassination to deal with, and the fact that someone in the upper echelons of power made a decision that the people of the United States don't need to know everything there is to know.
Well, isn't that what America has become?
Yeah, and all done under the rubric of, well, national security.
Right. Well, NORAD was scrambled for Payne Stewart. You know, I think if you have three jumbo jets doing U-turns in the sky, perhaps NORAD ought to check it out.
Yeah, but they were scrambled and sent out to sea. They were sent out over the Atlantic. I mean, I remember when we ran that audio years and years and years ago when it was released.
Well, I didn't bring it up to to get you in trouble or get you bad emails or anything, but I had sent you an email of Emmanuel Ortiz, A Moment of Silence.
Yes.
And did you read it?
Yes.
That was read by one of the WBAI. He has a show on WBAI. He's a Native American. I can't remember what his name was. It was something that, you know, gringos can't really pronounce well. But it was Ghost Horse was his last name. And that was an incredible, I mean, that, talk about blood on our hands.
And there's no escaping it. There's all kinds of blood on our hands, and part of the, you know, Jenny, part of the consumer culture is to make sure that we never look at our hands, that we're always
right.
Looking out there at the shiny, sparkly thing. I mean, look, I've got a congressman here, and this is a bit of a segue, but I've got a Democrat, theoretically Democratic congressman by the name of Nick Rahal, who recently voted, and you being a healthcare professional, you might have seen this, recently voted for the Let Women Die Act. Are you familiar with that?
The under no circumstances are women able to have an abortion?
No, this is the one that allows, it's one of those phony, baloney, ginned up, dummied up, faked up, rubed up prisoner of conscience statutes. That and this particular one allows a hospital, at its own whim, to refuse treatment to a pregnant woman, in case or to perform a life-saving abortion on a woman, even if it is a matter of literally life and death.
Well, if the woman is dead, isn't the fetus then?
You know, no, maybe they can save the fetus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the focus would be. You know, it is literally the Let Women Die Act.
Wow.
And my Democratic Congressman, Nick Joe Rahal, voted in favor of it.
Well, Rubio voted against, FEMA money for hurricane.
Right, and Rubio is a teabagging horse's rear end that one would expect to vote that way.
Yeah, I suppose.
But it's a little peephole into hell when you catch people with a D behind their name doing this kind of sad and sleazy sorry business.
Well, and that's the thing when because I got to one of the bands that played at October 6th was they were a band called Junkyard Empire. And I was up by the stage, and I was filming right on the side of the stage, actually through Dennis Traynor's legs. And he's doing a documentary on it. And so this band came out, and they were from Minneapolis. And I'm like, wow, because, I mean, that's where I grew up is Minneapolis. And they came out as, like, this nice little jazz trio. And so I'm like, all right, you know, jazz is nice, but I thought I would walk around and photograph stuff that was going on in the plaza. And all of a sudden this hip hop guy came on, and it was like Rage Against the Machine from Minneapolis. It was really awesome. You should play some of their stuff on, you know, Google them and play some of their stuff, cuz they're really good. A lot of people don't want to play them because they are pretty political, and they're actually very educated. And the lead singer is actually pursuing a PhD.
Wow.
So it's not like they're, you know, and that's another thing with this Occupy nonsense. You know, one guy in Miami walked by and said, why don't you occupy yourself with a job? And it's like, most of these people here have jobs, you idiot. You know, I mean.
Well, but look, you know, they're Atne Ute Aitbre, if you know
right.
What I mean.
Right.
Teabaggers, and I've got a perfect example of that later. I don't know if you're familiar with Victoria Jackson, formerly unfunny of Saturday Night Live, but she decided to visit Occupy Wall Street.
I heard that.
And I thought at some point along the way I might run just a little bit of Victoria, because she decides to interview this one individual who completely destroys her. And I don't think I've ever seen a more classic compare and contrast moment between a teabagger and an intelligent person?
Well, did he get a handful of them Jesus pamphlets then?
I don't know. she's an idiot.
Oh, my God.
I guess some sort of darling of the teabag set, you know. Once a performer, always a performer, I suppose. And this is some sort of shtick for her to be able to remain in the public eye. And it's just sad.
Well, and Dennis Miller as well. I mean, they're both. Well, and I can't remember, somebody tweeted after watching one of the pageants, you know, questioning whether or not evolution does actually exist. I thought that was pretty clever. You know, the Republican nonsense that goes on.
Oh, and then, you know, Jenny, there's last night. I of course could not bear to actually watch the whole thing.
Well, it's painful.
But daggum, they were that bunch of morons out in Las Vegas was practically flinging poo at each other. And Michelle Bachmann over in the corner, Anderson, pick me. Jesus, it was pitiful.
Yeah, she's wow. Yeah, it's. I mean, and we're like hamsters in the wheel doing nothing, and that's what irritates me so much about this country. Is we would rather, you know, focus on the stupid shit than actually accomplish. I mean, look at all the money that we're going to spend on this election. That's why I don't know about this Occupy movement. I mean, I don't know. I we'll see. I'm hopeful.
All we can do is let it roll.
Yeah.
Because and as long as it rolls nonviolently, I'm 100% behind it. That's all I can say.
The cops in D.C. were amazing. And Miami, they ordered pizza. I'm like, well, obviously you're not threatened. They did put because we were at the courthouse, and they did put the hurricane shutters up, and I overheard the guy that was shutting the hurricane shutters saying that the last time that he put them up was after Wilma, or that during Katrina's time when we had all those hurricanes. That was the last time that they had been up. So I thought that was interesting.
Just in case somebody, and look, there's always, and we've discussed it here, you may have heard it, there are always going to be agents provocateurs inside these movements, because it's the only way that the other side has of discrediting what they're doing.
But you know what was interesting in D.C.? There were several of them, and of course I ended up talking to him, and oh my God, he was nuts. But the people just ignored him. You know, he had his big megaphone and was spewing all this crap, and people were just like, whatever. They didn't engage him. So I think, and at these meetings and stuff, they're teaching people how to respond to stuff and how not, you know, what to do and what not to do. And so I think that that's really helpful. So it prevents some of that stuff. And if you see, like, the people that are being arrested, they're really not, like, Cornel West, I mean, really? He had a political sign? I don't think commenting on poverty is political.
No.
Per se.
No.
I mean, it has become, but.
Right. Well, when we're going to, as this becomes more serious, you're going to see more and more attempts to discredit the movement, and I think we just need to be prepared for that. If you go to an Occupy event and you see some idiot screaming, you know, I want to break windows, you know, take a picture of the guy, get video of the guy,
right?
And it will invariably be a guy,
right?
And check the shoes. This is important.
New.
Well, they're not just new. A lot of the times, these idiots will wear their police boots.
Oh. The guy in D.C. was wearing UGG-type shoes, kind of like a UGG work boot kind of thing, if possible. I mean, I didn't.
Well, see, but you were paying attention enough to observe. There you go. Janie, it's awfully good hearing from you, dear.
Yes.
Do not be a stranger, please.
Care.
Absolutely.
I could try, though.
Yeah, well, you know, just make sure we know you're okay.
Well, only if I have something to say. Otherwise, your callers do very, very well. And, of course, you're... I was freaking out that I didn't know that you were sick. And on Facebook, I said something about, where's Bob? And then I got the message. Because I thought... Because a couple of months ago or a year ago, there was issues with your podcast not downloading. And so I thought that's what had happened. So I panicked.
Yes. But... No, this time was far more prosaic and far more painful.
Yes. All right. Well, it was awesome to talk to you.
Awesome talking to you as well. And you know, of course, I am. I got your tweet that one day that you'd caught the podcast when I sort of conjured you.
That was funny. I was laughing.
Well, you take care, Janie.
Okay. You too.
All right.
Thank
bye
you.
Now.
Bye bye.
Janie calling from South Florida. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, what's up?
May I rant?
Do please.
You mentioned the story about the gentleman, and he was talking about suicide.
Oh, Bill Keller, yes. Sleaze merchant.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Bill Keller should take a look at the suicide statistics among a group of people that make up 10% of this country.
To wit?
To wit, they all have a short in their head. They are not gay or straight. It doesn't matter. They just have this nasty little short in their head. And the minute they get their diagnosis of epilepsy, they go into this nasty little depression. And according to a Danish study that just came out recently, once you have any kind of depressive episode, do you know what your chances of committing suicide go to?
Go through the roof, don't they?
23 times the base population.
And that's from nothing. 23
times.
And that's from something that, you know, epilepsy, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Guess what the leading cause... I'm going to try and keep this clean. You stupid...
Yeah.
Blankety blank expletive deleted. Do you know what the leading cause of epilepsy today is? It's called a car wreck.
Yeah.
It's a head injury.
Yeah, head... Right.
I've been an epileptic since the age of 13, and 2 suicide attempts by the age of 25.
I had no idea, Susan.
Oh, yeah. There's one thing an epileptic wants to can do when they want to. They have the ability to check out because they've always got the meds. And the thing is, it has nothing to do with being evil. It has everything to do with having your life being cut off, a big chunk of it, because people who dreamt of being Air Force pilots or astronauts suddenly are told, no, sorry, you can't be that. You'll never fly. You're going to be real lucky if you're going to be allowed to drive a car.
Well, that's the problem with these flippant members of the religion industry, Susan. They make these blanket statements about things of which they know not.
But you,
this guy, I mean, really, this guy, this Keller creep, runs a homo nomo organization.
Right. Do you know what the worst thing about it is? I am about as close to having a normal life as possible as far as my epilepsy is concerned. I'm one of the lucky ones for which I thank the goddess every day. I'm very well controlled. I've known people who have gone so far as to have the hemispheres of their brains split, divided. You don't think that's dangerous? Oh, God. Anything to stop the seizures. Because first of all, the seizures are, they vary from just blinking, going blank, to full-on convulsions. But also, what is the worst thing? Isn't the seizure itself. It's the look on people's face when you wake up and see that they've witnessed a seizure. It's kind of a combination of pity and revulsion. And you never forget it. You never get over it. And that's why the suicide rates.
No, I remember seeing it firsthand in high school. I was a very bad football player, and we had a kid who got his first diagnosis of epilepsy on the practice field. He didn't know he had it.
Yeah.
But that it is shocking.
And that look, you never forget it. It's burned into your brain, and you end up, at the very least, a depressive. And that's where your suicide statistics come from, because, God, nobody wants to see. I had a seizure once at a gas station. And admittedly, he was trying to be helpful, like giving that. But he almost broke my teeth off. He tried to jump the handle on a wrench between my teeth.
To keep you from swallowing your tongue.
Which is a crock.
Right. That much I do know.
Yeah. Okay, that wasn't bad. I could understand that. The guy was trying to be helpful. He was ignorant. What's really bad is when it's a board-certified doctor does the same thing with something else.
A bite stick or, yeah.
Yeah, same thing.
Look, I mean, in the broader context of suicide, Susan, what you hear if you were to see Keller's remarks is a sickening, obscene, fetishized subtext of a yearning for more of these. Anytime you see one of these right-wing religion industry goons opining about the nature of homosexuality or bullying, these idiots, if you can wrap your mind around it, and it's truly difficult, these idiots from the right-wing religion industry get off. They get off on it. And what's more, they cannot, and it's a cannot, they cannot conceptualize the fact that while they freely acknowledge that it's the Bible that's telling them to be as hateful as they are, they cannot conceptualize that not all of us have to follow their Bible.
Mm-hmm.
They yearn, they ache, Susan, for theocracy.
Yeah.
They want, and, you know, the Christian Reconstructionists are a classic case in point, of which Keller may be one, for all I know. He's probably a Dominionist at the very least. They yearn to be able to have public stonings in the streets.
Yeah, and if you want to freak yourself out, open up a history book and read what happened to the epileptics in the Middle Ages.
Sure. Well, look,
oh,
I mean,
God, it was ugly. It was really ugly.
Stonings, beatings, locked away in the most humane situations. The one who obviously comes to mind for me most frequently is that it is theorized that Socrates was an epileptic.
And Julius Caesar.
There is some thinking that Julius Caesar may have been.
Well, what I was thinking of was the 12th century. Because when the Inquisition came in with the...
Oh, demon possession, clearly.
Big time.
Throw them in the water. Yeah. If they drown, yeah, they're innocent. If they float, they're guilty. And then we take them out, dry them off, and burn them.
Yeah, if you had a seizure, you burned alive.
Because in those superstitious days, that was deemed some sort of madness imposed by the gods. Hence the ancient statement that those whom they would kill, the gods first make crazy. or something along those lines.
To me, I don't see much difference between, and I realize this sounds like, in a way, this can sound to other people like a very egocentric rant on my part, but what I'm saying is, in the society that the right wing wants desperately, very desperately to build, if you're different, you're dead. If you're gay, you're dead. If you're an epileptic, you're dead. If you're different in any way, shape, or form, you're dead.
All too true.
Name that tune, because we've learned it from the day we got our diagnosis, from the day we got that look. After we woke up after a grand mal seizure in front of a bunch of people.
But bear in mind, this Bill Keller freak probably still believes in demons.
He does. I've heard these people, they do believe in demons. And that's why the thought of a theocracy scares me beyond belief, because they would bring it back.
They want to.
Oh, yes.
And if you press it, no, they want to. They want a body of laws based on, and it's always fascinating, since this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, it's always fascinating, Susan, that they want to bring back a body of laws not from the teachings of Jesus. And that's the thing about these right-wing religion industry fundamentalists. They never, ever have anything to say about what Jesus said. They're always relying on the Deuteronomy or something in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
That even the people who own the book, the rights to the book, you know,
the Jews,
say ain't there.
Yeah.
So.
These guys are scary. To anybody who is the least bit different, whether it's a physical condition like epilepsy, whether it's sexuality, whether it's just a tendency to look at things a little bit quirky. These people are dangerous to you, and don't kid yourself. They will come for you if you give them half a chance. And that's why I support these people on Wall Street with everything I've got. Because they're doing everything they can to break the apathy of everybody. That's the point. Break the apathy in the South, in the South, Southwest, all over the country. Break the apathy in this country. And then maybe we can get something cooking. Because it has ever occurred to you that if we can get a big portion of this population angry and do one simple thing, it will freak this government, it will crash the government. Have them pull their money out of the bank.
Well, I certainly hope people will take their money out of Bank of America and Wells Fargo and these other monster mega banks.
And find
the best alternative, to be clear, is to find a way into a credit union. Of course, credit unions are hard to get into. Sometimes.
Yeah, I'm a member of my credit union, and for which I'm devoutly grateful, because they treat you like a person.
Well, because it's owned by its members,
yeah.
and it's of course the monies are just as secured as they are in a regular bank.
Yeah.
There are some issues with small community banks, because small community banks are usually owned by the people who own
right.
the small communities.
Uh-huh.
But on a hierarchical scale of good to worst, credit union, small community bank, regional bank, great big god awful freakish bank.
Stay away from the big mega banks. Oh God, please, yeah, just stay. Try to understand different to these people in any way, shape, or form is dead. George Orwell wasn't
kidding.
George Orwell, yeah, these guys took took Orwell and said, oh, my word, operating instructions. And
sadly.
And they didn't realize it was fiction.
Sadly true. Susan, very good talking with you this evening. And thank you for taking that issue. And, you magnify something and its flaws become bigger. And the flaws of Bill Keller have just become, too large to miss.
Hook. Yeah, I had a hook to hang it on. But you can hang it on almost any hook. Because everybody is different. In some way, somehow, they're different. And that's the way it's supposed to be in this country.
Exactly. Exactly.
Give my love to Agnes.
I sure will. You take care, Susan.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How are you doing? This is Bruce from Greensboro.
What do you say, Bruce? I was hoping you'd call back.
Top of the evening, sir. I got in a little bit earlier tonight. I was listening to the program there, listening to Susan, and I got to confess to you, Bob. I right now have a negative balance with Wells Fargo up in there, and I don't feel too bad about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't get all broke up.
No, they just took over Wachovia, and I had an account with Wachovia. And so, yeah, I'm not very happy with them. You know what they did, Bob? When Wachovia switched over to Wells Fargo, Wachovia, right before they did that, they issued all their customers, I don't think this is public knowledge, but they issued their customers or took a service charge going out the door of $24.50. Which I promptly called and complained. I know this is not the bank complaint hotline, but
it kind of is.
I promptly called and complained, and they reversed the service charge and said, "Oh, we apologize. That was done on the Wachovia side right before the bank switched hands." I thought that was very interesting. It might explain some of the 24% profit they just posted.
Well, I remember a long time ago when we had a conversation on the program that yielded some rather surprising numbers. The fact of the matter is banks now and credit card companies don't make their money the way banks used to make it. Banks make most of their money on overdraft fees and other fees associated with account, with having an account. And toward that end, you know, a lot of people do get in trouble with their bank. Because of things like what do they call it? Overdraft protection.
Yeah, which is just a new way to for you to consent to be charged extra money.
Well,
and actually, what you have it's like they say, well, you know, if you only have $5 in your account, you know, it's okay. We'll go ahead and approve the $35 charge, you know, but we're going to bill you $35 for it, and then in the end, you end up owing, you know, what's the math on it? $75. And in essence, it's loan sharking.
Right.
You know,
you're in North Carolina. You're in North Carolina. You see an abundance of payday lending.
Oh yes. Well, no. They don't do that here anymore. It's outlawed here.
Oh, is it out? Well, and that's why why it goes inside the doors of the bank, because the banks were the exactly. ones who were funding it in the first place.
Exactly. And there was a big stink locally, actually, here. I want to say about 5 or 6 years ago that. One of our state congresspersons was one of the people in the forefront of making it illegal because they were charging upwards of 200% interest rate, you know, on the payday lending. But along those same lines, though, Bob, you know, I read an article, I guess it was a couple of days ago in Forbes magazine, that in essence, it was talking about the Bank of America $5, debit card fee per month plus a $2 teller fee or something they're going to be charging. And said that you were just talking about moving money to regional banks and credit unions and locally owned and operated financial institutions. And in essence, this article said that this move by Bank of America would have that automatic effect. In essence, saying, you know, this article, of course, in Forbes now, of course, we have to remember the source.
Right.
was saying basically the free market was going to take care of itself with this one. Again, free market capitalism, Randian capitalism, again, saves the day. I almost spit up my Cheerios and peed a little when I read it, but it was actually, you know, it was a very well written article. The grammar was great and the punctuation was right where it was supposed to be. The rest of it, you know, was groundwork. So I just thought that, you know, it's funny how immediately the right wing, the capitalist, the extreme capitalists, as I call them, it's like extreme skiers, you know. They will jump to the rescue of, and actually the one good point in the article, that I will say this, the one good point in the article was that because of this act, Bank of America was already assuming that people were going to be moving their money out of this bank and onto other banks. And as a result, would be setting up the possibility of a government bailout down the road because they are too big to fail. Dig that one. Now, I read that point and I thought, okay. You know? So look for that coming down the road.
Right. Hedging their bets.
Exactly. So it's a win-win either way. If the customers stay in, then they get the extra money. If they don't stay in, well, they'll just turn to the Obama administration and go, hey, you bailed out General Motors. You bailed out Wall Street. How about us over here? We need some money. So, yeah, you know.
Yeah, that would be, we need some more money.
More money. Along those lines of greed and capitalism, I got my son here who has been staying down at the Occupy Greensboro site and has been dealing with some of the issues. I've been going, you want to talk to him, Bob? Would you be interested in having a little conversation?
Oh, I'd love to hear some firsthand.
Okay, hang on. Here he is. This is Casey. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Casey. You probably don't remember me, but we have met long and long ago. Good to talk to you, and sounds like you're doing pretty darn good, making a way for yourself. And your dad says you've been hanging out at Occupy Greensboro.
Yes, I have been. We had a protest yesterday at Bank of America, right in front of the good old Bank of America in downtown Greensboro, and we had a good 50 to 75 people come out. Lots of support from the. And it was about 4 o'clock that we were having it, 4 to 5, and we had lots of support from people who were just leaving their day jobs, to go home, and we had lots of honks going on. And not too many sour faces. We had a few sour faces, but, you know, not too many. And it's been going pretty good. But it's raining here today, so there might be a few less people at camp, but for the most part, we haven't had too much intervention from the police. We've had a few individuals who have been kind of harassed by the police and one.
Well, the Greensboro police do have a history, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They absolutely do.
But I mean, is there a full on Occupy? I mean, people staying overnight and just going and not leaving and.
Yeah, there are about, anywhere from 40 to 60 people staying there. My dad said that the number has grown. I wasn't there today, but I was resting up. But he said he went by there by lunch today, and there was significantly more than there has been. So it looks like it seems to be growing.
Well, that's awesome. What do you... Do you get a... Now, you know, North Carolina, obviously, a southern state... What kind of a mix of folks are you getting? I mean, do you get a sense that this is becoming sort of a broader lower to middle class movement?
It is. A lot of the people right now that are absolutely dedicated to being there are a lot of students at this point, because a lot of lower and middle class must go to their day jobs. So we had a lot of people turn out at the Saturday protest, the very start of Occupy, last Saturday. And so we have a lot of support from the lower and middle class and perhaps some of the upper echelon. But we right now at this point in time are more students and people who can be there all the time. So maybe even the unemployed and that kind of thing. And there are some definite involvers, of people who are involved who are middle class and have jobs, because they'll come to the General Assemblies at 6:30, but won't be there for the entire day and won't be there for the night. So, our numbers grow by, like, you know, 20 people during the General Assemblies, at least, you know.
And you're in college. You are in college now, right?
Yeah. Yes. I'm actually on fall break. I'm at Guilford College.
Wow. Excellent. What have your experiences been so far?
My experiences so far have been, it's definitely hard to work with, personal relationships in, such a small group where you don't want to offend each other. And I think a lot of, we've lost a lot of the ability to be able to handle each other in a very precise manner. We don't want to overstep our bounds and try and censor somebody because they are overstepping their bounds. And so because we have lost this sense of community, it's harder to understand how to react with each other. And that's one thing that's become slightly an issue. Organizing without computers is very hard to do because, you know, we don't necessarily just want to leave our computers there at the camp. And because we don't have, we do have quite a large group, but, so organizing without computers is kind of a hard thing to do. And printing. Actually, we've got somebody from UNCG who printed off, you know, 250 copies of a flyers that could be cut into three, and that was great. That was really great. So we're hoping to get more flyers and stuff like that out there. When I was passing out flyers, we had lots of support, from people. And I'm personally trying to work on getting some of the homeless community to stay there, because I know that, you know, all of this corruption, really, really hits them probably the hardest because they can't do very much. And I would like to make, the camp feel definitely more permanent with them there. But, you know, unfortunately, some homeless have their own camps that they can stay year round. And so they're not necessarily, they're really adamant about they really like the movement, but they're not necessarily wanting to come and move their camp with us. And right now we're staying in a YWCA parking lot, and we can stay there until November, the middle of November. And then after that point, we have to find somewhere else because they're using the parking lot to do Christmas trees and stuff. But previously we just had it till Friday morning. So that's a really great thing, and hopefully we can continue and make this quite larger.
Well, it is good work that you are doing, Casey. You talk about how one of the things that we see, I think, nationally, is that one of the first things that these groups do is they have to establish the basis and ground rules and parameters of community. That sounds like the work that you're doing. Are you operating on those same principles of consensus-based decision making that we're seeing with the other groups, as opposed to a more hierarchical Robert's Rules of Order top-down structure?
Yeah, we are using consensus, and what ends up happening is that just organic leaders stop popping up. You know, or just start popping up amongst the group, which is really great. And last night they were talking about working on delegations and also allowing leaders to start popping up more so that the leaders who have popped up don't take over. So that there's a leadership exchange, I guess, a leadership renewal. Where new people are allowed to come, leaders, you know, to be able to facilitate discussions, to be able to facilitate the nighttime security, to, you know, facilitate alliance, which is basically outreach and inner communications. We're working on the consensus model, and I think we have a long way to go. And actually, one of the newspapers reported something that was pretty false. I heard this from a friend in the Occupy encampment, so to begin with, there was a male who was wanting to basically get together some letters to give to the president because he was at Proximity Hotel in Jamestown, North Carolina, which was quite close. And he wanted to get these letters together, and he got them together, and then he tried to present them to the president, but the president didn't take them. But the newspaper said that the president declined because our movement is extremely disorganized, as well as we only had one letter, which we had 17, and a number of other things. And I suggested to this individual that the next time that we have news two, we have, somebody from the rhinoceros, or not rhinoceros times, but the News and Record, or any particular news media, that we should present this newspaper as being a false thing. And so we're really working on the consensus model and organization. And we're not quite there yet, but we're getting there. These things take a good amount of time. Something I've realized within the Wall Street Occupy is that, or New York Occupy, is that because they are so large, things happen quite easily. And because we are smaller, it can be a little bit more difficult because we've got people who are overtaxed and people who are undertaxed and people at work, whereas, in New York we've got thousands of people, it doesn't matter. You can find someone. So we're working on making ourselves quite larger, and hopefully we'll get more people, within the next few weeks.
Well, it is awesome what you're doing, Casey. I applaud you, and I encourage you to stick with it, and I have no doubt that you will. Are you getting any kind of pushback from the teabaggers or whatever? Are you hearing the same kind of silly crap that they're the right wing and the for-profit media are palavering about elsewhere? Has anybody approached you? What are your demands?
A friend of mine and I, spoke to about four police members on Saturday or Sunday night. And we had an interesting conversation, and one of them, was kind of like, what would you like to see, happen after the rest of this? And I'm like, that is very hard to say. I certainly would like to see corporation greed ended, but because we're so large, because we're a worldwide movement, it is very hard to say what we want. And there hasn't been too much, negative feedback from the media, besides, like a false report in that particular newspaper. I don't remember what newspaper that was. I wish I could tell you. But we haven't had too much of that. For the most part, stuff like News 2 has been honestly reporting what's going on, and positively. We had an interview a couple nights ago with using about three people, and then we had a live shot that they did for the 11 o'clock news. These interviews, were great, and the reporter, was very great. But we haven't had too much negative attention, so as of yet.
Casey, and I ask this because I mentioned in conversation last week, a particular North Carolina issue, that being, a nefarious and, overtly rotten human being whose last name is Pope, who has basically bought North Carolina's state government. He's the one who installed the school board that tried to turn back desegregation in one North Carolina community. He owns your legislature. And this is all prologue to my question, whether, and I guess there are three possible answers. or any answer you might choose to give. But there are there's been some intimation that inside the Occupy movement there's a sort of unwillingness to engage with government in any form because the whole system is irreparably broken. There's another school, and the other two schools of thought I'm sort of inquiring about here is there in the discussions, is there any sort of delineation between problems within state government versus problems within the federal government? And by way of explanation, for instance, I think about the hate-filled draconian immigration law in Alabama, which I'm sure you're aware of. You know, that's obviously a state law failure. That's a failure of state-level government because it can't withstand constitutional scrutiny on a federal level because the federal law prohibits it. Is there beginning to be any sort of dialogue about where the problems lie, or is it still just a general statement of the system is shot?
There are a number of people, I'd say about maybe 10 people at camp, who believe that the system is quite shot. They are also, they're interesting individuals. I like them on a personal level, but I don't necessarily agree with them because it's very hard to work with that. It's very hard to work with the lower and middle class on that basis because not everyone believes that. But there is a larger discussion about what can be done. We've been looking at on improving upon the participatory budgeting system here in Greensboro, as well as creating a more productive tenant association. There's a Greensboro Housing Coalition, but they're not necessarily a tenant association. And there are things like that. I don't know how many people know about this today, but there was a lawyer out in the upper Midwest, I think, who basically who was asked to, basically take up for Occupy, as a whole and start charging, start building a case and start charging, individuals and corporations upon their crimes. And so there is some definite, it's not necessarily just about hating the system. It's about what can we do because this sure isn't working. And, you know, a number of socialists and anarchists and communists and, you know, are involved. And there's also, you know, people who like Obama and people who don't. It's pretty wide movement. I hope that answers your question to some degree.
Yeah, it does. It does, Casey. And, of course, there are immigrant issues in North Carolina. I guess if I were in the advice business, which I am not and never will be, the only thing I would suggest is that it is beneficial to have sort of a theory of everything. And it's something that your dad and I have talked about in the past, and I've talked about a lot, and it is this, that the right wing is very, very good at understanding that when they present a unified front, they get what they want. And consequently, you know, Wall Street predators will link arm in arm with the fiends of the anti-abortion movement, who will link arm in arm with the people who want to make sure that you can't drink water or breathe air anymore and pollute everything there is. To that end, I would be interested, and you might call back, which would be really cool, and just let us know whether you get any sense of that within the Occupy movement with which you're dealing, i.e., to wit, the idea that all these single issues that motivate people can be drawn together into a unifying force. Because when that happens, when that day dawns on our side, big stuff is going to begin to roll. I'm convinced. I am absolutely and utterly convinced of the fact.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's why there are several thousand in Wall Street and several thousand in San Francisco and maybe several thousand in D.C. and in Korea and South Africa, France, London. I mean, it's all over the place because, you know, the 99% has been across history. You know, if you look, you know, into feudalism, the serfs were the many and the lords were the few. And you look into slavery. The slaves were the many, the plantation owners were the few. And it happens all across history. And so I certainly hope and do agree with you that we can get this on our side, that we can link arm in arms on our side. And, you know, we did it in America, you know, in the 1960s, and I certainly hope that we can do it in the, you know, 2010s, 2020s, and hopefully just really just kick some butt here in the world, you know. Just
and Casey, I understand that you're doing a little bit of radio, maybe.
Yes, I operate a regular radio show on WQFF Greensboro, which is Guilford College radio station, and I play a number of strange things. Sometimes I'll just play just random things out of the rotation as well as a little bit of my own. And that's Fridays, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m.
Great slot. Great slot. People can party to what you're spinning, man. Although,
yeah.
I don't know. Is spinning, you know, spinning doesn't really apply to a computer file anymore. See how outdated the whole DJ lexicon becomes? I'm glad to hear that you're doing that. I'm glad to hear that you're kicking butt in school. Stay with it. Stay engaged. Well, you know, you're an inspiration because you and your generation are the ones whose world my generation and the generations above mine have already screwed up. So if anybody's got a right to scream stop it, you and yours do. And I hope you continue to do so. And to the extent that I can help you expand your voice, well, you know, ask your dad. You've got a friend here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. And one last thing. The WQFS station is also webcasted at www.guilford.edu/WQFS.
And I'll bet guilford.edu, is that G-U-I-L-F-O-R-D?
Yes, G-U-I-L-F-O-R-D.
.edu. Well, it has been duly noted in the chat room, Casey, so we appreciate it. I'll try to check it out myself.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. Have a great night, Bob.
You take care, Casey.
Thank you.
Are we going to get Bruce back?
Yes, we are.
All right.
What an amazing guy, right? Hey, Bob?
Yeah, that's a pretty cool kid, Bruce.
Yeah, you know, his sister, you know, she's 14, and she went out. She was on fall break Monday and Tuesday. So what did she do Monday? She went out with her brother on a revolutionary mission to hand out flyers all over the college campuses in Greensboro about Occupy Greensboro at 14 years old. What a great kid, you know?
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
I'm thinking about starting my own commune. I don't know. So anyway, we're going to have our own revolution.
Well, you know, it is not lost on me that Casey and Cassie, you know, what a ticket, will eventually be president and vice president of the United States.
But maybe they'll just be co-presidents.
Yeah, maybe by then, who knows?
You know what I'm saying? And,
that's an idea that was birthed on the horn, and we're watching and waiting.
I hear you, man. Well, you know, what a great week. But, Bob, it's been great talking with you. I know you had a great time with Casey. I'm really proud of this guy.
I am too, Bruce. I am too. Trust me.
He's pretty amazing. He's got a great radio show too. So, you should check that out when you're not doing your own radio show.
Yeah, I will. I really will. I'll be interested to see what kind of jams he's playing.
It's kind of interesting stuff. I sat in with him one night, and there was only a couple of times that I was mildly, you know, freaked out a little bit. I went, what in the world is this? They call it dubstep or something. Have you ever heard of this stuff?
Yeah, I have. And for an old Zappa fan like yourself to say, what is this?
Yeah.
Oh, we're getting old. We're getting old, Bruce.
We really are. I mean, it's featured in regalia, you know, with a little bit more bass and, you know, but anyway.
Right.
But I'll call back in, Bob. It's great talking with you, man. Hope you have a wonderful evening. I don't want to tie up your line. I know you got a lot of, you know, other great callers coming in tonight. But we wanted to give you a sort of a first-hand view of what's going on in Greensboro these days.
I'm glad you did, and I hope there will be follow-ups, brother.
There will be. All right, my friend. Have a great night.
Take care. Bye now.
Okay.
Bruce Birch, Horn alum, he was there with John Fox and me, and Ben Birch, no relation, and Boss Man Wayne and Agnes. When this whole thing began to gel and come together, Bruce used to host his own show right here on the Horn, All Things Reconsidered. And also, like I said, some of the most enjoyable radio I've ever heard. He and John teamed up for a program called Fourth Estate Radio. And wow, just wow. Zany, freewheeling, nothing quite like it. Like I said last night in the chat room, I will never forget March Mango Madness. Or any of a number of other moments, and there were a lot of them. Bruce Birch, dear friend. Michael, otherwise known in the chat room as Kid A, with an email. He says, spinning. Hard drives still spin, I believe. Flash memory doesn't, but the metaphor still works. You're good. What an awesome call, by the way. Wow. Signed, Michael. Thanks, Michael. I didn't think... Yeah. Yeah, the hard drives do spin. Really, really fast. You know, for a while, and maybe they still are... For a while, Western Digital was hustling a hard drive, a 10,000 RPM hard drive, their Velociraptor series, that actually had a clear top so that for the first time you could actually see the platters spin. But it's kind of like seeing a hummingbird. You still don't see the wings moving. You just see the blur and that little arm going, tick, 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 you know. Well, that's sort of entirely irrelevant. But thanks for saving my metaphor, Michael. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen. No, I just called. I just wanted to know if you had heard about this latest, I don't know what to call it, but what B of A is trying to do?
Maybe not. Go ahead.
Well, because we, you know, because they eliminated Glass-Steagall, you know, so there's no wall anymore, per se. Anyway,
right.
Bank of America, you know, they're sputtering, as you know, but these fools have, a Merrill Lynch division, which is, I don't think it's a holding bank, I don't know what it is, but they are now moving some of their derivatives over to the FDIC protected depositor side of the books.
Oh, nasty.
And these are derivatives that have never been regulated because unlike Citibank, which has some minor regulation for their derivative position, this Merrill Lynch bullshit is completely dark pools. And they know so much of it is probably just rotten to the core. But get this, they hold $75 trillion in derivatives. I mean, this is like talking about outer space.
Yeah, you mean like those numbers that the human mind is incapable of comprehending?
Well, yeah, when I was always in awe because I took astronomy, you know, and I was always just sitting there just mesmerized by the numbers, you know, just because.
Yeah, there's a reason.
Way.
Yeah, because there's a reason Carl Sagan used to say billions and billions.
Yeah, right. Well, anyway, so this derivative shit, you know, is just crazy. But see, what's happening though is the Bank of America is surely trying to muddy the water so the taxpayers will be again become the backstop for this shit. This is criminal. The FDIC is against this, and the feds or the Treasury is supporting it. It's just a nightmare. And, you know, I'm just shaking my head, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, because this is just setting us up, you know, for...
So, they're going to raid the FDIC now, right? I mean...
No, it just, you know...
$40,000 at a time, or did that get raised after the whole savings and loan crisis, or is it still...
$250,000.
Oh, man. Oh, wow. I mean, yeah, this is a bank job.
But the thing is that they have the largest amount of depositors at, and this is the thing you can think about, there are $75 trillion in derivatives versus the $1.04 trillion of depositors.
Wow.
Okay, so, I mean, I'm not, you know, obviously some, we would like to think that most of these derivatives are okay, but we have no way of knowing, and that's the problem with these exotic financial instruments. But the most disturbing aspect of it is that where there once was a wall, where this shit was illegal, this is
Wild West banking, isn't it, Sandra?
Well, yeah, it's horrible. And it's really outrageous that, you know, that the regulators are having questions about it. I mean, this is all because Bank of America is teetering. And everyone out there should know that Bank of America is one of those too big to fail institutions. You see,
and I'm sure there are moles, if you will, inside the Obama administration who can make that case very, very stridently when the time comes.
But they're going to have a hard time doing it because, you know, it's just kind of, I think, you know, even as small a numbers as it might be, it's a larger number of people who are now quite aware of the banks as this sort of...
You said, you know, nobody knows about these derivatives. Don't we know one thing about derivatives now, Sandra, that they are inherently dangerous and ultra-hazardous?
Well,
I mean, is there a fiscally prudent derivative out there?
Well, no. I mean, the origins of them may have been sort of, you know, had some... value, but when I hear that there's a quadrillion cloud of them floating around the earth, so to speak, you know, it's a bit of a worry, and that's the problem that's going on in Europe, is the insatiable black hole of these banks. And, you know, trust and believe what's going on in Greece. I mean, good Jesus, what is it, 500,000?
Yeah,
you know,
it's huge.
What in the world? You have that many people out of a population of, I'm not too sure the size of Greece, but that is a huge percentage of the population, and they continue to fuck them. This is the thing. This is what's killing me about this whole European thing. It's like, wow, I mean, I'm not too sure what's going to happen to Greece, but that country, the social fabric cannot sustain the type of social unrest that's going on there month after month after months like this. I'm just in awe, and not in a good way, of what the fuck is happening to that small country, all right?
And I don't mean to display my ignorance, although I am. What is, to the extent that, you know, you're sort of shocked or stunned or what, is there anybody who has any kind of a projection of anything remotely resembling a normal outcome for Greece? I mean, because I haven't read it, if there is.
Well, no. I mean, the outcome for Greece is a decade and a half of depression if it continues this way, because they're not going to be able to pay this debt. Just think of the whole issue here is that the French and German banks refuse. They do not want to take the haircut. That is why all these credit rating people are hovering around them nonstop. Every other week you hear about the threat. In the meanwhile, you see them poor people who are marching. They're the ones being squeezed to death here because I guess there's another pay-up due, and Greece keeps missing their sort of budget configurations. They're not going to ever make any of them, right? And apparently... Ireland is kind of whispering they need some more money for their banks. It's just like, I don't know.
Because of the nature of the euro, you know, in former decades, if you had a weak currency, things like tourism would happen because you'd get a positive exchange rate vis-a-vis the local currency, and it would mean that you could go and, I don't know, rent a villa for a month, and that was, I know I'm using a very, very, very low-end example, but that promoted a little bit of economic healing. But because Greece is still married to the euro, I mean, it's not like if you fly from New York to Athens that your dollar is going to suddenly go further against the drachma, because the drachma's gone.
Yeah, well, no. I mean, if you look at the European project, the integration of it as far as their trade and border and the like was reasonable. But when they did this single currency, it was built in, this disaster that we're having right now. People predicted that this is what would happen when they first proposed it because of the lack of fiscal component that we see doesn't exist. But, you know, the reason why it just keeps coming back like a bad penny is probably because of these credit default swaps and, you know, the idea that, oh, looky, looky, I'll just make a bet on sovereign debt. It'll never go bad. You understand what I'm saying? So now it's about to go bad. And the problem is no one, because it's so much dark pools around, they don't know what the exposure really is, you see. So it's like Lehman Brothers exponential 10 or something, see.
And you know, going back to that 500,000 you mentioned, Sandra, for every one person that's in the streets, there's probably one or two who can't.
But yeah.
Age, disability, whatever, but would want to be there. Meanwhile, David in Tennessee tells me the population of Greece is 11 million people, roughly the same as New York City.
Okay, so that's crazy. That's what I thought. I thought it was like just some huge percentage there. Well, that's
so imagine if 500,000 people were Occupy Wall Street in the middle of downtown.
Yeah, no, that's a substantial percentage of the populace there. I don't really know. I don't know what the hell the politicians think they're doing in Greece, you know.
But it is spreading. You mentioned Ireland, and Ron in Raleigh just brought something to my attention. He says Moody's is at it again.
Yeah.
He says Moody's is threatening France with a downgrade of its rating. He says the solution proposed to forestall the downgrade is, of course, austerity.
Right. No, France is AAA, so they're really wigging out about it. But the thing is, there's no way if you go along with these sort of fantasy rules, there's no way that France is going to maintain that rating if they go along with this EF, I forget the initials of the sort of fund that they're sort of using to bail out these banks. I think the Sheik stepped in for Dexia, that bank in Belgium that's been nationalized, which means, once again, you know, the public. And Belgium, I don't even think they have a government still. You know how long they've been operating without a functioning government in that country?
Something near, I mean, months?
Something crazy. But anyway, I don't know. That's the only reason, you know, that's the only reason why I call about the Bank of America thing, because I was thinking, this ain't never going to stop until these banks are broken up into smaller entities and, you know, bite my tongue, but, you know, public banking needs to come back with a vengeance. I mean, look at South Dakota. You don't hear peep about them. You know why? Because they got a goddamn surplus. You know why? Because they have a public bank.
And isn't that why all the credit card companies ran out there? I mean, stability issues and corporate-friendly laws, or is that something entirely separate?
They have a small population, but they were the only state that had a surplus when the crash happened in 2008, and it's because they have this public bank, and it's sort of taboo to even talk about it, and it's bizarre.
Kind of like talking about the ownership structure of the Packers. Shh.
Right. And the thing is, though, it would be the solution. Lincoln did it. When they told him we need this much to fund the war, he said, fuck you. And didn't he do greenbacks?
Yeah.
Well, that was a fuck you to the bank. So, you know, we have plenty of history to take a different route. And also, I heard that the student loan thing is hit $1 trillion. See, that's another thing that's
and gonna, the and the petition on that thing has hit 500,000 signatures.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that do you know how stimulative that would be if they jubilee that debt? That would be $1 trillion in stimulus just right off the top. People making payments, they would have all that money there to reinvest into the economy. I mean, and the thing is, the whole idea that we've gotten to a point where we can't even discuss restructuring our debt situation is a political problem, because there is no other reason for us not to think about getting rid of some of these debts. I'm just sort of, you know, I'm stunned. And a lot of people I know who are, you know, students and not working and got debt, they're like, no pay. You know what I'm saying? They're not paying them.
Right. And what, you know, you jubilee those student loan debts, Sandra, and suddenly a lot of people's credit ratings get better.
Not only that, but it would just be a way to, like I said, introduce a whole bunch of stimulus. Don't even have to look at trying to deal with passing a bill and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is, it could become that by itself. Because do you think that if you have a choice between eating and paying your rent and paying some fucking student loan, what the hell are you going to do? I know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I don't care. I mean, what are you going to do? Take blood?
Right. And you know, once God knows how many millions are tied up because the single I read this the other day, the single largest client of the collections industry.
Yeah.
Is the federal government trying to chase down student loans.
Oh, yeah. No. And so
if you're in one of those situations where you've gone into a default with a student loan and you're being dunned by some sleazy collection agency, if they manage to collect that money, let's say you owe $10,000 and you strike a deal with them to pay $8,000 and you pay $8,000 to those horses' asses, the federal government, the guarantor of the loan in the first place, is only getting four because the fees on that crap are up to 50% of funds recovered. And in that case, well, it's the best argument that can be made for this jubilee we're talking about.
Well,
because
no,
it's just money thrown away.
No, and the thing is that I'm pretty sure that if there's no jobs to be had, people will be forced to make other arrangements. Because if you have millions upon millions upon millions of people not paying back their student loans, what the hell are they going to do? Round them up? I'm serious. What are you going to do about it? Destroy some credit? Who cares about your credit? If you can't get work, who gives a hell?
Well, and even let's say you've got a job. It's not like the lending houses are out there loaning money left and right.
Oh no, but I just the student debt thing is kind of like it is an unbelievable burden for a generation with no job prospects or no way of getting their career started. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's bad enough to have to pay it back when you're working, but to be expected to come up with it when you're living at home with your parents and being hounded day in and day out? I don't know. I just am sort of, you know, I'm just thinking about.
Well, and
you know,
so and some of what you're identifying, Sandra, are dignity issues too. You know, it's hard to have any human dignity when you busted your ass, you did what you were supposed to do, you got through college, you are living with the folks, and they're answering the phone from some yahoo who's trying to squeeze blood from a stone.
Well, do you know that there is a surprisingly large number of expatriates who have left this country because of some fucking student debt. That is a trend that's on the increase.
Just skip
it. Some law students, because they've shipped out, now they're shipping out entry law jobs to India and where else. So, you know, you have $300,000, you can't get a job? What?
Yeah, what exactly?
You're stuck. Oh, listen, this phone, I really need...
Oh, it got her. Good to hear from Sandra. There's so much wrapped up in all of this, and it's another one of those things like I was talking about with Casey, where everything touches everything else. The debt crisis isn't one thing. It's everything. You know, it's Bank of America trying to save itself $5 at a time. But at the same time, it's somebody who worked hard in college and took out student loans with every intention in the world of paying them back and can't and has to deal with that hell and damnation on a daily business, daily basis. Had a friend who once said that if we, and this is before he got caught, that if we really wanted to catch Osama bin Laden, the thing to do would be to sick what he called the student loan secret police on him. Because they'll find anybody anywhere. There are proposed solutions out there. This is one of them. The student loan debt jubilee. By the same token, you have to give some props to New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg. He did... And didn't hide from it or shy away from it. He did the obvious. He introduced legislation in the Senate to create the 21st century WPA. And again, that would be real-world stimulus that would make a real-world difference. It would work, in other words, which necessarily means what? Ain't gonna happen? No, I'm not gonna be that negative. I can't just be a complete nihilist. I can't. So, yeah, here it is. It's about 4 minutes past the hour. We haven't taken a break of any sort throughout the program. And we probably should. Just because sitting in one place for 3 hours gets a little bit... gets me a little squirmy. So we will. We will take a little break and come back. The lines are open, of course. You know the number. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. You know, there's a story breaking, or not breaking. It's out there. Naomi Wolf got arrested last night in New York City for doing nothing more than walking on the sidewalk of her home city. She was wearing an evening gown, and the NYPD took her down for things that don't make just a hell of a lot of sense. That's where all of this is now. You know, Bank of America's down to the point where they're calling the cops on their own customers with the assertion that a person cannot be a customer and a protester at the same time. It just doesn't work that way. That's a quote from a Bank of America manager. You can't be a customer and a protester. That's at the Santa Cruz branch of Bank of America. People were coming from an Occupy Santa Cruz march to close their BOA accounts. They had no signs. They weren't chanting, protesting. There were no cameras. Well, maybe they did. But the whole point is if you've got any of those, you're a protester and you can't come in and get the money that you own. Be a good little sheeple and move along and leave your money in the failing bank. Jesus, criminy. Amazing. No, we're not seeing yet what is going down in Greece. But it is possible that we will. I mean, even something like the arrest of Naomi Wolf. Jesus, they never arrested the armed teabaggers with their threatening signs and misspelled signs and hooting and screaming in their ignorance. But a woman in an evening gown walking along the sidewalk outside an event in New York City is a problem? Simply because she asked a question of police? Because that's what she did. She asked a question. Am I not allowed to walk on this sidewalk? And it got her arrested, cuffed, detained, taken down to the 7th Precinct. You are watching, with all of this, with the police responses, the mask come off, the full-on birth of straight-up fascism. Meanwhile, the right wing, the teabaggers and whatnot, have a hissy because some people in the Occupy movement have begun, if you tweet, and if you don't, you've probably seen it anyway, you know, the pound sign on your phone, the tic-tac-toe sign? In the Twitterverse, that indicates it's something called a hashtag. It's a way of aggregating comments and information. So some people have begun wearing maybe just one even. Because, you know, one instance of anything for the right wing and the teabaggers and the rest of the morons is proof that everyone is doing it. And so there's a photograph, an individual has a red hashtag on her sleeve. It is quite obviously a hashtag. But not to the wing nuts. No, to the wing nuts, it's a, what was the phrase? It's a bizarre swastika. Got it? I mean, come on, you're probably sitting near a telephone. Look at the pound sign, the tic-tac-toe sign. Absent the use of mind-altering LSD or some other similar substance, is there any way you can turn that into a swastika? Because really, if a hashtag is a swastika, well, you know, at that point, for you, the walls are probably breathing and expanding and contracting, and, you know, the sky's got a nice paisley pattern to it. Jeebus. Oh, the wing nut. They're not going away. And they're going to have to be contended with. When we come back, just a few minutes of that paragon of teabag intellect, Victoria Jackson. Or as Flush Flimball would say, Victoria Jackson. So that's what we're going to do. Like I said, we'll take a little break and come back. You know the number. The email address is Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I want to thank the two individuals who have contributed this evening. It is badly needed. So is more. We are far behind in our fundraising for this October. I guess we always will be. And thanks for the one contribution we got last night as well. Between the three, we made up for one night's fundraising. Thank you. So we'll be back. I'm Bob.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, tonight's final two-thirds of an hour begins now, but who's counting? About 19 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Thank you for listening. I don't say that often enough. And I'm reminded that I also don't often enough give the phone number, 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333 if you want to save us the cost of the toll charges. Cool? Yeah. Before we go back to the phones, a trip to the mailbag. Andy in California writing, the Greek Parliament voted to take away collective bargaining rights. Heard today on NPR that the Greek Parliament voted to take away collective bargaining rights from Greek workers. This outraged the unions, especially in the Greek private sector. Where have we heard about taking away collective bargaining rights before? Is there some international Milton Friedman worldwide neoliberal coordination going on here? My guess, yes. Goldman screws up, hiding the government debt with derivative contracts so Greece can get EU membership, and the working class people have to pay out of their hides for Goldman's fraud. This, says Andy, is wrong. It's the Naomi Klein shock doctrine in action. A neoliberal bait and switch, as Sandra says. Instead of the European banks taking a haircut on Greek debt, the pain will come directly out of the hides of the working class people. This is a neoliberal fantasy. Make working class people into wage slaves. A third world nation with a working class lacking benefits or retirements after a life of hard labor. That's the definition of working class slavery. This is a worldwide attack on working people. The same rights are being taken away in Greece as in Wisconsin. The ultimate race to the bottom for the benefit of the multinational corporatocracy. A worldwide conspiracy or just coincidence? I hate the word conspiracy. It is a worldwide coordinated assault. When you coordinate an assault, it's not necessarily a conspiracy. It is a certain group of people and corporations coming together
for their own mutual benefit. Wait a minute. That almost sounds like a organized... What? But yeah! On the other hand, if working people talk about a global uprising, well, that's class warfare. That's what that is, class warfare. How many decades did we have a political leadership, representative leadership that screamed about the worldwide communist conspiracy? See, that's the thing. If working people stand together, bad. Corporations standing together, good. Of course, it's a lot easier for corporations to do it because they've got branches all over the world. And they can work their will that way. And they can, like some sort of god-awful hookworm, sleaze and dig and grime their way into the centers of what passes for government. And when they do it, it's just another day at the office. Right? So, yeah, Andy, you're right. It is coordinated. And, yes, it is on the backs of evil freaks like Milton Friedman. That sick bastard should be dug up, his body thrown in a toxic waste barrel, and dropped into the Mariana Trench if I didn't have more regard for the life down there that manages, that's one of the few places that, that hasn't been touched, well, it probably has, by his evil hand. Marty writing in and says, Bob, those teabaggers are the real American people that we should be listening to. Sarcastic enough? Yeah, I get it. Adding, there are, it turns out, international chapters of ALEC, at least one of them in the UK. Yeah, this, and they talk to each other. Sure they do. But it's not a conspiracy when they do it. And just remember, as the stories sort of trickle out, and the word losses is tossed around, where things like Wall Street and global finance are concerned, I think it's beneficial to recall the law of conservation of mass and energy. Granted, they would seem on their face to be radically different propositions, but they're not. The law of conservation of mass and energy says that neither mass nor energy is ever created nor destroyed. So, too, with those imaginary losses, they are merely transferred from one place to another. Most frequently in austerity world, from your pocket, our pockets, to theirs. It is a radical level of wealth redistribution, the likes of which many had never fathomed and cannot fathom, even as it is taking place under our noses. What Sandra mentioned with Bank of America suddenly shifting its stuff into FDIC-protected brands, well, what does that tell you? That's our money serving as the insurance backup to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And they want it all. You get it? Of course you do. Halfway insulting that I would even ask such a question. Got an email in earlier from our buddy Tom, also out in California. Subject line, Jerry Brown, TV, contributions, and Mark Twain. The above only connected by your show. Our show, Tom, our show. Some discussion of Jerry Brown yesterday. Although surely he's demonized by the right as a left-wing radical. Yeah, it's along the same line. Obama's a Marxist. Please. And, you know, maybe that's the response to teabaggers, because they're still doing it. I've still got the audio of Victoria Jackson saying, well, Obama is a Marxist. Jesus, she sounds like a freaking Muppet.
And the only response now is, you just look at these morons. Oh, please. Next. Is there anybody out there who can actually carry on a conversation? Please. So Tom writes, although surely he's demonized by the right as a left-wing radical, his conversion to near-blue dogginess has been gradual and ongoing. I liked him a lot better as Governor Moonbeam. Way back in 1976, I attended a rally for his first presidential campaign at the University of Oregon, a.k.a. UC Eugene. You know, the Ducks fans are not going to like you for that, Tom. He really was pretty liberal then. But my take on him is that he's always been one to look at polls or election results and mistake them for the will of the people. I have no doubt that he believes that the country and California are much more conservative than they were 35 years ago, so that means he should be also. Kind of sways with the wind. When Proposition 13 was passed in 1978 and the destruction of the state began, he was governor and worked actively and diligently to implement, not to stymie, but to implement it. As mayor of Oakland, 99 to 07, one of his signature efforts was the establishment of a military academy high school in Oakland, of all things. So I'm disappointed, but not surprised, at the garbage dump, the one we talked about yesterday evening in northern San Diego County. You know, the one where they want to dump San Diego's trash and God knows who else's on top of the bones of ancient first peoples. Now, about the TV habit, says Tom. One of the best things my wife and I ever did was when we returned from a six-month stay in Mexico and re-entered American life with our then four-year-old, was to decide that we would no longer do TV. At all. We do own a TV box, but it's only connected to a DVD player for the rare occasions when we borrow a disc from the library. I don't think it's been turned on in over a year. I credit this decision more than anything else for our son's academic success. I highly recommend it. Tom adds, my contribution is in today's mail. Come on, people. Even if Bob's away for 2 weeks, it's still only 10 cents an hour. And I should add that Tom and a few others who, if they wish to be named, can let me know. I think they should be recognized. Are have been contributors to this program for a very, very long time. There are some months when all we saw is a handful of contributions, and Tom has almost always been one of them, as have a handful of folks. Our continuing thanks. I was able, says Tom, to attend a lecture on Saturday at UC Berkeley, Parents Weekend, by the editor of Twain's autobiography, published last year and available free online, also on Kindle, and came away with a Twain quote I thought you'd like. The purpose of humor is to adjust the focus. I love that quote on a number of levels. That's a quote you can only have after the advent, arguably, of photography, something that came into its own during Twain's life. He was very much a part of his world. The purpose of humor is to adjust the focus. Thanks, Tom. Thanks very much. So let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Right there, you're in for a scare.
There's only two people who could possibly do that. And since we haven't heard from Brian in a while, I'm guessing this is Jim.
Happy Halloween.
You are in the spirit and early at it, aren't you?
365 a year.
Well, you know what? There's a lot. there's a lot to be said for the fact that we just live in a permanent Halloween, isn't there?
Well, that's my point exactly. I mean, that's just it. Just thought I would share that with you. I know you have other people who are more worthy of your time.
Are you a zombie aficionado? Vampires, mummies, Frankenstein's monsters? What, Jim? Do you have a favorite?
Oh, vampires, definitely. Like I told you about, the Twilight Saga, or even Frank Langella back in his movie. My God, if vampires look like that, I'd have a blood bank flag flying outside my window with the door open.
Oh, you're wicked. That's delightful. So you've already decorated?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've got Halloween lights out.
Very good, very good. So will you have trick-or-treaters or just decorate? And...
Oh, yeah, I've got one right now. I have a wolf who's on my Charleston bench.
Well, very nice.
He parks out there sometimes, and he's out there tonight. I can see his eyes glistening in the lights. They attract him for some reason.
Wow.
And my cats are just going absolutely crazy.
Oh, well, I'll bet. You know, and if we could speak cat, it would be don't open that door. Do not open that door.
Tis true. Or it could be a werewolf. I don't know.
Werewolf? Their wolf. Their castle.
I don't know. Speaking of werewolves, last night's Republican thing, did you watch that shit?
I watched excerpts, Jim, but I didn't have it in me to just sit down and park.
No, I didn't either. But when I saw those two go at it, those two governors, and just really, I thought to myself, is this the best these guys have?
Well, it is to the extent that you sort of take your anti-emetic before you turn it on. It's damn fine entertainment. Is this, Jim, the effect that a decade now of reality television has had on our body politic?
I think so.
So do we get to send these clowns to an island for the next debate?
I don't know.
Make them eat some bugs or something?
What's his name? Of Godfather's Pizza?
Yeah, Herb.
Oh, Lord have mercy. What? I thought, as I told you before, I had one taste of this pizza back in 1984. It almost conquered my ability to master the gag reflex.
It is nasty.
Oh, God, just as nasty as he can possibly be, and so is he.
I saw the clip of poor Michelle Bachman. Hey, Anderson, call on me, Anderson! pardon me, I guess this is the caddy segment of the program, but what the hell was she wearing last night, Jim? She looked like she was wearing something from the Sgt. Pepper's collection.
It wasn't Chanel.
No, Coco would not have been caught dead in that.
No, not at all. I mean, I don't even know a drag queen who'd wear that outfit, to tell you the truth.
Well, they've got more dignity.
Exactly. But, I mean, if that's the best the Republicans have to offer, those people just... accusing one another and just, it looked like, I called it Bitch Fest 2011. And even the people on IMUS were embarrassed by it this morning. I mean, even some of their own supporters are.
Well, I think if you got, the old guard Republicans, the kind I'm talking about, if you got them good and liquored up so that they'd start telling the truth, they'd hang their heads. I mean, although there was one interesting moment, or at least I found it interesting in watching the clips, Jim, and that was to see Ron Paul take, for all intents and purposes, a cold chisel and start going to town on the monument of Saint Ronnie.
He did. I didn't see that.
Yeah, he outright said that Reagan made terrible mistakes in swapping arms for hostages and negotiating with the terrorists. All of that arising, of course, out of the statement that Herb Cain had made, that just like Israel traded, 500 Palestinian prisoners for one Israeli soldier, Herb had to get out in front of the curve on that, Jim, and said, I'd do that too. And consequently, it engendered some questioning. And then immediately thereafter, whoever it is that's doing his communications said, Jesus, Herb Cain, do you know what you said there? Oh, I wouldn't do that. Jesus. I think there was the people at Saturday Night Live really do have their thumb on a certain pulse of these Republican shenanigans, from the fact that they accurately predicted the meeting of the minds between Chris Christie and Romney, down to the fact that the way they staged their skit is exactly the way Romney and Christie then did it. And this latest skit that got Rick Man on Dog Santorum so upset, had them scattered to places like janitors' closets, empty parking decks, and a gay bar on Castro Street. That really is where they are. I mean, Jesus, look at, you know, Santorum is an evil caricature. I don't know if you can imagine a Hitler marionette, but that's kind of like what he is.
Oh yeah, he's just a very, very sick person, in my opinion. I mean, he's not even worried of being fitted for chaps if he were to go down Castro Street, you know?
Although, you know, careful about whispering that into the ear of the universe, that'll be on a Saturday Night Live skit next week. But there's other, you know, the little slap fight that Willard Romney had with Newt Gingrich, you know, when, well, we got our idea for mandatory health care coverage from you, Newt. Did not. Jesus, it's pitiful.
Well, they should have all had pillows so they could slam each other down like a bunch of girls in a freshman dorm. That's what it reminded me of.
God.
They're just absolutely ridiculous. Beyond the extreme. That's all I can say.
And how much more mileage can the for-profit media get out of this? How many more stupid things do these clowns have to say?
Well, the more they say them, the better I like it. Maybe people begin to realize just how stupid they are.
And that's the place I go, Jim, because I worry. I worry about that. Did you happen to see the Ken Burns documentary on Prohibition?
I did.
And so you saw the segment about the rise of that Wayne B. Wheeler creep.
Yeah.
And how he did the math and he realized he didn't have to build a whole majority. He just had to build enough of a margin to get done what he wanted done.
Yeah.
When I watch these clowns in these Republican debates, I start thinking about presidential elections with margins of, you know, 51-49, 52-48, 53-47. And I realize that they're there. This is not about creating a plurality or a majority. This is about maintaining enough of a margin to steal an election. So, you know, that 20% or whatever of Americans who think that Barack Obama is a Muslim Kenyan with a deep-seated hatred of white people and an anti-colonial bent, we can laugh at these clowns all we want to, but every time we snicker, we have to have a little sober-up moment, Jim, and think, there's a lot of millions of Americans that are going, yes, brother, preach it.
Well, you're right there. I can't argue with that because there are people who do swallow that stuff.
Well, I mean, you're over there where you can get what passes for talk radio in this region, and all you've got to do is turn on your radio in the morning, and you can hear it in its in all its ignorant glory.
I don't even do that anymore.
Oh, really? You took the cure?
I mean, it's, well, number one, they cut his program down to an hour, and that's basically punctuated by ads and stuff like that. And I remember last year I called Shane Southern and I said, will you please do something about this idiot? And even he admitted, he said, you know, there are callers on that program that are truly an embarrassment to this state.
And whatever, and the thing is, that's the way it is with right-wing radio anywhere, Jim. It is a magnet for the most embarrassing element of this republic.
Fred, you're right.
I mean, you may think there's something special about some of those jokers, but if you get out and around, if you were to listen to right-wing radio, say, you know, in your native South Carolina, you'd hear them there. Different accent, same stupidity.
Oh, yeah. I'm afraid stupidity does have a habit of getting its way at times.
But you'll be, I think you will be pleased to know that I had a conversation with a progressive leader from South Carolina while I was gone this past week. And he says they are beginning to pull together a real coalition of progressive people and are beginning to make some noise and actually be heard. So there's hope.
Well, sure. Of course there is. And, you know, the more these people begin to expose themselves to what they really are, I mean, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but I operate on one principle. You can't fool all the people all the time. I mean, you know, you simply can't do it. You can do it for a while, but for a while it stops working. And, you know, eventually, by osmosis or whatever, maybe the message will get through that these people are not acting in your best interest, but only their own. That's for sure.
Well, I tell you what, I'd never been, and granted, it was Georgia and not South Carolina, but similar geography. I'd never been to that neck of the woods, but it sure is pretty country.
Oh, well, it is. Sure, it's beautiful down there. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well worth saving.
You should have seen Kiowa Island before the Arabs bought it and developed it. That was an incredible place.
Well, Kiowa, Dufusky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Pat Conroy wrote his first book about his experiences teaching on Dufusky Island.
Yeah, The Water is Wide. I've read it. It's a brilliant book. Made into a passing fair film as well, called Conrack.
Exactly.
With John Voight in it, no less, who has gone on to become an absolutely certifiably insane wingnut.
I went to school with Pat.
Did you really?
Yeah, we were classmates. As a matter of fact,
at the Citadel?
History, we were lab partners.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, I was in C Company, he was in R Company.
Teeny tiny world. I take it he's a decent fella?
Yeah, he is, very much so.
Well, he worked out a lot of demons, the Lords of Discipline, and in particular the Great Santini. You know, all that's got an autobiographical bent to it.
Well, the Lords of Discipline is particularly poignant to this narrator, let me tell you.
You are in a position. Because you're in a position to note that it's reality.
Yeah, I lived through that, Bob.
Well, I've read just about everything he's written, and for somebody who isn't familiar with it, you know, it's shocking, it's painful, and I can't imagine what it was like for you to just turn those pages.
It wasn't particularly pleasant because, like I say, I lived through a lot of that stuff, and I was there when the first black student cadet was admitted.
Brutal, I take it?
Oh, yeah, it was. I mean, there were guys who would go up in front of his room, and they would put sheets on things and burn sheets and stuff like that, and, he was in, I was in 1st Battalion. He was in 2nd Battalion. He was in G Company. His boy, his name was Charlie G. Foster. I'll never forget it. And I looked in that boy's eyes one time, and I have never seen such fear in my life as I saw in his.
What possessed him to be the one who broke that line, Jim?
I have no idea. I don't know. The only reason I broke it was because it was a family tradition. So much for family tradition sometimes, you know?
Well, sometimes family traditions have to be put to bed.
Well, but there were a number of things that that place taught me. And it served me in good stead. I'll say that.
Granted, but at some point along the way, don't you also, or didn't you also wonder if there was a better way to go about teaching those things?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was that whole type of plebe system and stuff like that in military academies is, it serves a purpose to a certain degree, but beyond that, it doesn't. I mean, in your service academy, so you have beast barracks. It's just 3 months, And then, of course, during the academic year, your freshmen are allowed to proceed to pursue their coursework. But at the Citadel, it was from August until the following June.
It must have seemed to many, if not all, that that plebe year would never end.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. And what I can, you know, it's something that I went through, and well, from, I think 13 boys went down from my hometown, and I was the only one that finished.
Wow.
Pretty rough. Wasn't a lot of fun. But then again, there were parts of it that were very endearing, and you made a lot of good friends, and, you know, because you watched out for them, they watched out for you. And it did teach you a certain amount of cohesion, which is important.
Well, especially under combat circumstances, and right.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, who is watching out for your six? That's exactly right, absolutely. And, but what was particularly interesting about that place is if you wanted to be a master of revenge, that school would teach you how to do it.
Elaborate if you'd like.
Oh, well, I had one particular upperclassman who just gave me a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to get you, you son of a bitch, if it's the last thing I do. And I had to go to the infirmary to get a shot or something one morning, and they disposed of the syringes. And so I grabbed one, and then I took it to chemistry class, and I think Pat was sitting right next to me, and I pulled out some acid from that particular syringe, and this particular upperclassman had insisted that I bring a delinquency slip by his door, but you couldn't go inside the door because if you went in anybody's room, it was an honor violation, you could get kicked out. Unless he was there, but he wasn't there. But he had his dress coat, you know, the claw hammer thing you see on parades.
Right.
And I just shot that syringe all over the sleeve. And heard that asshole bellow when he came back and saw that that gray had turned to yellow.
Oh, my.
And he took it over to the laundry.
It wouldn't come out.
Come out. It came off. I haven't told that story in 50 years, 30 years. Well, yeah. My God, well, I'm telling you this tonight.
Well, but, Jim, there's such value in it because I got an email earlier today talking about some of the reminiscences that I did last night and for some reason saying that there's value in it. So I will suggest that there's value in yours as well. Because personal histories are the real histories, aren't they?
Well, they are. And if someone, you know, puts his heel on you for a certain period of time and is totally unrelentless in so doing, then you're going to react. And you're going to nail his butt right to the wall, which I did.
With not a dime's worth of remorse either.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, I was just very glad that I didn't get caught. And those blouses back then cost about $300.
Man.
And his sleeve just, the acid just knocked it right off when the cleaning fluid hit it. So, I mean, this person had done grievous harm to me. He really had. And it made my life a living hell. And, you know, it was the only way I could respond. I couldn't go to the commandant's office and turn him in, because that would have been the end of me.
And because the system didn't admit of that sort of grievance procedure, really, did it?
Admitted to it, but, I mean, you know, you had, you know, his upperclassmen and stuff like that who were going to make your life even worse and just drive you out of there.
But you survived.
Yeah, I survived.
So did
I mean, about survival.
So did everybody come out of there with a particularized degree, or I mean, were there majors within it, or?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, it's one of the, they have an excellent history department, engineering, stuff like that, science school as far as academics are concerned. And as a matter of fact, it produces more officers than West Point, almost.
And is it strictly Army, or do you make an election at the end of your graduation?
You can go to either of the five services. Either one.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So.
Well, you kind of make me want to go and reread the Lords of Discipline now, Jim.
I think you should. As far as the 10 is concerned, I never really came into contact with the 10, and because all I did was keep my shoes shined and my nose clean and my nose buried in the book.
And just try to remain as unobtrusive and unnoticeable as possible.
Yeah, but strangely enough, in the summers, I needed a summer job, and they had the Citadel Summer Camp for Boys that Mark Clark founded. And I was a counselor there for 3 years. And it was totally different. It was wonderful. Charleston's a beautiful city, Bob.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And so I met a lot of fine families in Charleston who were connected with my family, and so it wasn't all bad.
It seldom is. It would be so much easier sometimes if it was, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, I take the bitter with the sweet. That's the way life is. And taught me a great deal about the system, how it works, and how to survive very bad things. It also taught me a lot of good things, too.
Well, I am. It was
recommended for me, and I had no choice in the matter, so I stuck it out and pursued my career.
And graduation must have been a very, very special day.
Yeah, it was. Absolutely. I was so glad to throw my hat up into the air. And, you know, saying, well, it's time to turn the page, another chapter. And there are a lot of people who say, well, how did you stand it? And the only thing I could say to them was, that which does not kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah, Nietzsche
exactly.
Said something there.
Exactly. Precisely.
But sometimes you feel like, man, if that's the case, I'm going to wind up one strong SOB.
Bob, you have to be.
Yeah.
Don't have any choice.
Well, Jim, it's awful good hearing from you this evening. Thank you for the thank you for the Halloween wish and the sound effects. I appreciate it. And
well, I didn't mean to get off with all that other stuff.
No, that's okay. Just, gosh, I don't know if it applies now to suggest that you try to keep the wolf off the door.
No, he's out there, and he's looking in the window. Excuse me, he's on the Charleston bench, and he's looking in the window. He drops by about two or three nights a week. He's
fascinating.
A beautiful animal.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you're not way out in the country either.
Not really, and I certainly don't tell anybody about him.
No, because something bad would then happen.
Exactly. Exactly. They're beautiful animals. They really are. And sometimes I can hear him. What beautiful music they make, these children of the night.
Very true. Anyone who's ever heard it knows that. Jim, have yourself a great evening.
And the same to you, sir.
All right. Take care.
Out here.
Bye now. Yeah. There's no replacement for the personal nature of those kinds of histories, and I thank Jim for sharing that with us. It's about 5 minutes before the hour, and I guess we're pretty close to done. Kate wrote in. She said, "You can add. I'll add my name to the list." She said, I can contribute even though I'm on Social Security like Susan. It's no sacrifice. All I have to do is forego a bag of brown rice or a bag of top tobacco for the month. Come on, listeners. Just a $10 bill. Consider, Kate says, what you might be spending in the drive-thru. And as to her question, when is the 6th anniversary celebration? I guess it's going to happen either Friday or Monday. Not Monday. Either Friday or Wednesday. Because, as I noted, the schedule's a little bit weird. Monday, I have to be in Charleston for a meeting with the EPA. And Tuesday is a Dr. Bill Prism American History Series. I hate to jump the gun on anything. That just feels like bad luck. So let's do it Wednesday, a week from tonight. We'll call that the official 6th anniversary celebration. And the more, you know, anniversary, schmanniversary. But y'all have kept this going largely on your own with the long-standing help of Coal River Mountain Watch. And it is something that honors the it's humbling to me. Because you're the ones who make it keep happening on every level that it happens on. And I am honored beyond words that you do. Another contribution did come in a few minutes ago, and thank you very much for that. We've catching up to do, but catch up we can. So thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. You, especially. Our volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, our op-ed correspondent Reverbo, my head writer and spiritual advisor David in Tennessee, John Fox, who keeps making the website behave itself and works on it when it goes down, and even in the midst of what is a very, very hectic and busy schedule for him. And Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben Birch has run White Rose Society since 2002. Talk about anniversaries. He'll have his 10th next year. A 10th anniversary of literally saving and preserving liberal talk and conversation, progressive talk and conversation, merely by his own determination. And he never sends a bill. WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know. And that's no exaggeration. All the people at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You can go there and learn about everything that Coal River Mountain Watch does, including the Coal River Wind Project. You can become a member. You don't have to be in West Virginia. You can be a member of Coal River Mountain Watch anywhere. Just sign up for the email, list and the notices, and by adding your voice to the greater weight of what happens here, you become a part of the solution. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith.